Let's go back to the 90s when two songs were unavoidable. I don't wanna wait for our lives to be over. Where have all the cowboys gone? Paula Cole, who'd caught our attention when she sang on Peter Gabriel's 1993 Secret World Tour, then owned the airwaves with her own songs. It's been an interesting path since then, and now she's out with her first album in 3 years. It's called Low, L-O. And frankly, I wondered if we'd hear that incredible, intelligent voice that won her a Best New Artist Grammy in 1998. Well, we do. I wanted to love again. I prayed for another chance. Green Eyes Crying, off Paula Cole's new album, Low, and Paula Cole joins us from the NPR New York studios. Paula Cole, welcome.
Thank you, Robin Young. Wonderful to be here.
Well, we should say, you are from Rockport, Massachusetts. This part of our program is based in Boston. We feel we heard you coming before anyone did.
You know, I started, like, literally singing at the airport Hilton lounge on Thursday nights with Al Vega, you know, singing the classic Chestnuts.
Right. How are you?
Oh, everything feels good.
You always seemed older and wiser than your years. Now you're older and wiser than you were then. Talk a little bit just about the first single, The Replacements and Dinosaur Jr., a tribute to your friend and former collaborator Mark Hutchins. He passed away in 2016, 51.
Mm. The more you live, the more you lose. I lost you.
What did he mean?
So you have to imagine it was the early 90s, and Mark and I drove across country in one of those renter rider trucks to the Bay Area. We ended up living in a loft with two roommates above a gas station on the corner of 17th and South Van Ness, and that's where I really began writing furiously. And he was such a mentor to me, and he showed me The Replacements, Dinosaur Jr., and XTC and Daniel Lanois production, and we set up a home studio, and that's where I recorded all these demos that ended up getting me signed. And he left the world too young, and he left two little kids, and I just wanted to honor him somehow, and the song needed to be fun because he was, and it was just celebratory.
Yeah. The first cut tells us how, you know, just deeper and even more enriched your voice is. Let's listen. Follow the Moon.
Mother was afraid for me. I dreamed too big, always biting off more than I could chew. No roadmap for a hopeless sinner, a feckless leader, just wandering and stumbling through.
So we know this refers to your parents.
It takes me years sometimes to be able to sing about things. Sometimes I feel protective of the people I'm writing about, and I suppose also it's a result of being a mother myself and realizing some things about myself that I can't just identify as a straight person. That appears on the album. And looking at my parents, who are in their 80s now, and seeing their influence on my life, seeing how I was such a tomboy, and I loved that my dad raised me as the son he longed for. He was an Eagle Scout, and I was an excellent camper with him, and I guess I thrived in that. And then I thrived in a male-dominated industry because he raised me to be strong. But also, I kind of somewhere along the way lost my narrative, I think. And so I'm looking back, and I'm looking at who I am. I don't want to hurt anybody when I write about people or my life. I love them. I need them. Mm. But it's a very self-reflective, vulnerable album.
Your mom, Stephanie, an artist. Now, it's the 90s. for some reason we were in a trailer backstage at a show. Your mom came in, and I remember immediately this lightning rod of love, but also she had like a wild colt in you. Are you singing about this too?
She's so much in my music because I feel like I have that on my shoulders, all of the unfinished hopes and dreams of our mothers and our mothers' mothers, like so many of us do. She's brilliant, and she's imperious, and she's uncompromising and smart, and I'm her daughter, and she was an artist, and then she had two kids very young, and so that changed her life. So I think I've always been singing and living for those unfinished hopes and dreams, and so, yes, there's a lightning bolt between us. And, yes, we were at the Hatch Shell in 95. I remember that date so clearly.
Yeah. Well, are you saying, too, that then you're traveling with Peter Gabriel and you're, you know, becoming a superstar and you have huge breakout hits? I mean, was there some tension there?
It all happened too fast. That's what Emmylou Harris said to me.
Yeah.
It all happened too fast, and I don't think I handled it very well. I think I was very anxious. So, yes, out of college, you know, waitressing and working at coffee shops. Then Peter Gabriel heard my demos and my unfinished album, and I left for Mannheim, Germany on Halloween of 1993, and I was thrown out in front of 16,000 Germans that night and began the tour with Peter. He recorded the video just a few days later after my joining, and that became big. And
okay, hold on.
Yeah.
That became big. It's one of the most iconic recordings in rock history. Let me just flesh that out a little bit. Sinead O'Connor was actually on this Secret World Tour. When she left, he calls and leaves a message with you. You fly out, and suddenly you are singing Kate Bush's part on Don't Give Up.
Don't give up, you still have us.
And just wailing on In Your Eyes. Let's listen.
Yeah, I mean, I was one of four women. I didn't really see the other three women, and there were over 60, mostly British men, on this giant rock tour operation, you know, with moving parts and trap doors. It was incredible. I'm a huge fan of Peter's, and I was. I knew his So album back to front in every which way, every permutation of every background vocal. So it was a profound honor. I adored Sinead O'Connor. I was on her first concert in Boston, and so it was profound for me to step into her shoes.
Well, you were a lot like her, I found myself thinking. You dressed in baggy clothes. You cut your hair short. You said it came too fast. Do you think you were maybe too soon?
Well, thank you for that advantage. And I do identify strongly with Sinead O'Connor, and she actually did inspire me to cut my hair off and just be myself. By the time my second album came out, Where Have All the Cowboys Gone? I mean, it was just unstoppable. It was this force, and the songs really became bigger than me. It all happened very rapidly. I didn't have the greatest support system around me. I really did not. And I didn't want to keep parroting out just the hits. I wanted to be true to myself. I needed to step off the hamster wheel. And so I got pregnant, and I ended up taking a 7-year hiatus. I raised my beautiful daughter. I've, you know, been able to release all these diverse, interesting albums that are true to myself.
Just being reminded of your journey explains the just the depth in the songs we're hearing now. This is Invisible Armor, you know, about not wanting to be the strong one, wanting to remove the invisible armor. Let's listen.
That soft scent of faith is where I long to stay. But memory jolts me.
Does that say it all?
It really does. To me, that is like the heart of the album, that song. I'm just finally at a place where I can let it all go. I realize I'm my own enemy here. holding up my guards, and I'm ready to shed another ill-fitting snakeskin. I'm growing out of a phase and a time in life that I was holding tightly, and I feel ready to go back out into the world again. It's even though I feel like I've been cool and uncool and cool and uncool, I'm not just those hits. I'm not that first wave that happened. I stepped back from that and let it settle. I have a lot of parents and a lot of kids now, Gen Z, and they're coming to me on TikTok. Wow, that's been an incredible infusion of positivity. I do feel very understood by next generations.
Yeah. Paula Cole, the new album is Low. Paula, welcome back.
Thank you.